This episode is brought to you by Facebook. So you were scrolling on Marketplace, and there it was, the bike you'd been searching for. You sent a message, and it turned out the seller was super chatty, kind of funny, and an avid cyclist. The next thing you know, you're in a cycling crew. Well, a community cycling group. The thing about Facebook, you might find more than what you're looking for. From a browse to a bike ride, this summer, find more on Facebook.
I'm Ariana Brocious.
I'm Austin Cologne.
And this is Climate One. We're starting today's show in a small town in Wyoming called Kemmerer.
It's been good for us. Yes, it's been good for us. We got four kids. Three of them, they'd all left, but three of them come back to Kemmerer.
Mark Thatcher has lived here for nearly 40 years. The walls of his living room are covered with pictures of his family. Four kids and lots of grandkids.
I had a granddaughter graduate, and can I brag on this?
Please.
I got to meet the class president of the Valedictorian, an athlete of the year all in one pretty little granddaughter. So, you know what I mean? Kemmerer's been good for us.
Thatcher came to Kemmerer back in 1988 for a job in the local coal mine. He worked as an electrician and retired just a few years back. In fact, he spent his whole career working in coal.
It might be a little dangerous and it might be a little dirty, but it's a good job and you appreciate it. It's all fine.
And it's a job that allowed him to provide for his family and live comfortably and well. Some 2,500 people live here in Kemmerer. It's a small community where many people know each other. But the industry on which Thatcher built his livelihood, on which the whole town has been built, is coal. And that's changing.
You know where the story is going. Burning coal is a major source of the greenhouse gases driving global warming. Mining and burning coal also pollutes the air and water, and it contributes to tens of thousands of deaths per year. Plus, in today's world, electricity from coal is no longer as cheap as wind and solar. And so, as the country transitions to greener energy sources, coal is on its way out. Between 2010 and 2019, nearly 300 U.S. coal plants closed. Roughly half of the remaining capacity is set to close by the end of 2030.
At the same time, coal has provided the economic backbone for many rural communities. And we know that when it goes, the hole it leaves behind can be devastating. Livelihoods are destroyed. Thriving communities suddenly empty out.
So, is there a way to transition off of coal without sacrificing the people and places connected to it? Today, we're going to take you to coal communities across the country, places that are going through this transition right now.
And we'll hear from people who are trying to figure out how their towns can stay vibrant, what can be done to prevent their friends and family from being left behind.
So let's go to Wyoming, where coal has been king for more than a century.
Another of Wyoming's great natural resources is coal. A familiar sight is strip mining.
That's how Kemmerer got here, is the surveyor that found the coal named it after a rich man, and so he supported it.
The town of Kemmerer is located in Lincoln County, in the southwest corner of the state. I was there in September, and the first thing I noticed was the landscape. I mean, it's wide open. I live in Brooklyn, and I've become quite used to large buildings being nearly on top of each other, so this was a bit of an adjustment for me. I mean, there's the expansive beauty of the desert. Giant mountains in the distance, and the sky is so blue without a cloud in sight. And sagebrush lines the roads as far as you can see.
And this is very Wyoming. Like, the minute you get out of town, yeah, there's not like a lot of sprawl. Yeah. And so the minute you get out of town, it's just, I mean, that's all public land. So.
Wyoming public media reporter and producer Caitlin Tan gave me a little tour.
You could just like hike wherever you want in the sagebrush out there and do whatever you want, pretty much.
The downtown area is what you'd expect a Western Strip to look like. Low-slung buildings line each side of the wide road. Some storefronts are empty and run down. And then there are the new stores that wouldn't look out of place in hipster Brooklyn. Two things you see everywhere. Dust, which is kicked up by the pickup trucks rolling down the main road, and signs advertising fossils.
Okay, so here's a sign, fossil capital of the world.
There's Fossil Country Frontier Museum and Bob's Rock Shop. I stayed at the Fossil Butte Motel. Even the coffee shop in town is called Fossil Fuel Coffee Company. This town loves fossils.
Here's a little fossil shop, Tinsky's Fossils.
Tinsky's Fossils is one of several places where you can buy actual fossils in Kemmerer. It's run by Cody Tinsky, and it's been in her family for generations.
This is a Diplomystis. It's one of the most common fish that was in the lake. These are Nideas. They're called Nideas. This is a Priscacara.
These are fossils found right here in Kemmerer, and the same geologic processes that fossilized plants and animals from eons ago also made this area rich in coal.
The coal mine is the biggest employer, 215 employees.
This is Brian Muir, Kemmerer City Administrator.
Another big employer, of course, is the power plant. It has about 109 employees,
right,
full-time employees. And then along with that, another employer that's big here is ExxonMobil. So those are the big economic engines of our community.
Economic engines that help fund things like schools, libraries, and the fire department. But that's changing. In 2019, the coal plant in Kemmerer announced it might be shutting down.
You know, not too much after I got here, that's when they did actually shut down number three, which dramatically affected the coal jobs. They'd already been in decline.
When he says not in number three, he's talking about one of the three units at the plant. They ended up converting that one to natural gas, but the entire plant still plans to close down by 2036. And it gets its coal from a local mine, so when the plant closes, the mine will either have to find a new buyer or it will close too. And that's got people worried, like retired coal worker Mark Thatcher.
Coal mine, the power plant, these are all basic jobs that if you want to have a gas station, a grocery store, or a hospital, anything, you got to have a base to build that on. If you lose the base, it's pretty hard to sell groceries to a place that nobody lives or have a motel where nobody comes.
City leaders hired Muir to find ways to diversify the town's economy and to ensure its future.
There was a lot of anxiety and some despair. Even, you know, people were saying, some outsiders would say, well, you might as well just close down the whole town. It's going to become a ghost town. That was a little extreme, of course.
Right. Muir understood what was at stake and that he had a limited amount of time to come up with a solution. He needed something that could generate jobs and support the town and everything in it.
And so they took that opportunity to be proactive about trying to save the coal industry, so which I admire. I've really admired their tenacity to try to do what they can. One of our original hopes and plans was to convert the coal-fired plant into and retrofit it to do carbon capture, utilization, and storage.
But that hope didn't pan out. And then he heard about another possibility, nuclear power.
Nuclear power. It's something we're hearing a lot about lately. With coal in decline, we need a lot of carbon-free energy to take its place. The U.S. already gets about 18% of its energy from nuclear power, and has for decades. Similar to fossil fuels, it provides baseload power, meaning it can run constantly, unlike solar or wind, which are intermittent without battery storage. And compared to wind or solar, nuclear has a pretty small footprint.
And simply put, where climate is concerned, nuclear is better than coal. Splitting atoms generates electricity without emitting greenhouse gases or the harmful air pollutants that come from coal, like sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxides, and toxic heavy metals. Those can contribute to respiratory illnesses and contaminate the air, water, and fish we eat.
Of course, nuclear energy is not without its risks. Nuclear power generates nuclear waste, and we still don't have a long-term solution for storing that. Many people worry about accidents. And mining and refining uranium, the main fuel for nuclear energy, creates emissions and can expose workers and nearby communities to radioactive materials.
But there's a new push to redesign nuclear energy for the next century. The U.S. government is investing lots of money to boost so-called advanced nuclear technology, trying to find ways to make it safer and cheaper.
And billions of dollars in federal resources have been dedicated to help energy communities transition away from producing fossil fuel energy.
Communities like Kemmerer.
One of the big companies getting some of that federal money for advanced nuclear technology is TerraPower. It was founded and largely funded by tech billionaire and philanthropist Bill Gates. In 2022, TerraPower was awarded $2 billion from the Department of Energy to build their first plant. As the company was deciding where to locate that plant, Wyoming stood out. It's relatively close to populous states like California, which have big energy demands, and it already has the big transmission lines needed to move the power there. Chris Levesque is TerraPower's CEO and president.
Wyoming is very energy literate. We say they have a high energy IQ because, you know, they've been doing energy projects there for decades. You know, there's so much coal in Wyoming, and there's so many coal plants in the Mountain West. People are very familiar with electricity production, and they were even somewhat familiar with nuclear energy.
But Kemmerer wasn't the only struggling coal town in the state. There were three other communities in Wyoming that also had coal-fired power plants slated for closure.
And what we found almost right away was like an amazing amount of interest.
And that's not a big surprise. A nuclear power plant of this scale could turn around the entire economy, support all those schools and town services that the coal plant did, and maybe even help the town grow. So Kemmerer City Administrator Brian Muren made his pitch and crossed his fingers.
I gave a presentation to them about why they should choose Kemmerer. And I think we did pretty good. When they left, they said, wow, you guys had a PowerPoint. So,
After the break, TerraPower makes its decision and Kemmerer braces for some big changes. That's up next when Climate One continues.
We're always trying to get people talking about climate, and you can help others find our show by leaving us a review or rating. Thanks for your support.
This is Climate One. I'm Arianna Brocious.
And I'm Austin Colon.
And we're spending part of today's show in the southwestern part of Wyoming, in a coal town that's trying to adapt to the changing energy landscape.
The town of Kemmerer is literally built on coal. But when residents learned their power plant would be shut down in 2036, many started to panic. Would they become another casualty of the green energy transition?
We were hungry for something to be able to adapt to this changing economy that we're all going through.
Town Administrator Brian Muir saw a golden opportunity in TerraPower, an advanced nuclear company that was looking for a place to build its first plant.
A big energy announcement came today for the western U.S.
Wyoming will be the site of a new nuclear power project.
In southwest Wyoming, plans from a company backed by Bill Gates to build a small nuclear power plant are now moving forward.
Muir was on vacation and just so happened to be driving past a nuclear power plant when his phone rang.
So I'm sitting there and then the mayor calls me, hey, we got the plant. And so I was really excited, of course. Because I didn't have a chance to be there because I was on vacation.
Right.
Kind of thinking about energy like I always do.
TerraPower CEO Chris Levesque says they ended up choosing Kemmerer in large part because the town showed so much enthusiasm.
Each community had a pretty good score. But honestly, one of the things that attracted us most to Kemmerer and Lincoln County was the economic situation. The coal plant there was closing down the soonest, and helping a community that's been an energy producer for, you know, decades, if not a century, be part of the clean energy transition was, you know, really motivating to us.
When Muir got home from his trip, he got right to work.
After we found out that we got the plant, we did a survey of the communities and had an overwhelming support for bringing here the nuclear plant. Mm-hmm. Over 83%, I think 85%, somewhere in there, supported bringing it here. And they definitely all mostly agreed that it's going to help our economy.
One of the supporters was fossil shop owner Cody Tinsky.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I think it'll be good for our town. I think it'll bring in new people, and hopefully, so Cameron doesn't become a ghost town again. Hopefully, it's not a boom or bust, but yeah. So hopefully it helps our town.
Former coal mine worker Mark Thatcher agrees.
There's been a little bit about the nuclear storage, and I hope they've got some things figured out. There's supposed to be a lot less waste, a lot less storage. This has been put on as an environmental friendly, but it's a profit-making deal.
He trusts that the company is invested in making this project a big success.
They've had over 700 engineers working on the design of the plant. And the nuclear regulatory is going to fine-tooth this thing. They want it to work. They want it to work well. I'm glad to be the first one, because I think they're going to be really careful, thorough on the design, because this is a showroom for them.
Of course, nuclear power does make some people skittish.
There's concerns, of course, and there should be.
Muir says the biggest concern among residents is safety.
I mean, you've got to be careful with nuclear power because you've got to deal with the risk of, you know, radiation, of course, and the risk of any contaminants in the soil and the water supply. Those are risks. But, you know, everything that I understand about it, the new nuclear, some call it the nuclear renaissance, whatever you want to call it,
right, is
purportedly safer. I've heard up to 10 times safer. It involves human beings a lot less.
Mm-hmm.
Uses new technology, uses software. And I'm excited, actually, to bring it here and to let people know this is an opportunity. And yes, there's risk, but I think it's a good risk to take to get the jobs that we need. And I think the risks are way less than they have ever been.
Even so, some people are deeply skeptical of having a nuclear power plant in their backyard. While I was in town, I talked to a few people who didn't want to be recorded, but were clearly opposed to the plant. Matter of fact, when I asked one woman for her thoughts, she said, "Here's what I think about that," and flipped me the bird with both hands, just in case one was too subtle. Some residents don't like to see an outsider, especially a liberal elite outsider like Bill Gates, come in and start making big changes to a place they're not from or connected to. Here's Mark Thatcher again.
There's people that don't like Bill Gates. I don't know if he's the best person in the world, but he's a guy that's got the money and wants to do this. He has a little different opinions than a lot of people in Wyoming do. He's pretty anti-coal. Wyoming's a pretty Republican state. He's pretty Democratic. You know, and I'm not saying right or wrong, but there's different opinions that they don't like each other. Or disagree. Like's not the right word.
This is a vulnerable moment for Kemmerer. And TerraPower is making big promises. So it makes sense some people are on edge.
I'm glad that people are a little leery about the nuclear project. A couple years ago, we had a fellow come in, and he promised more than he could deliver. And that makes the whole community a little bit skittish. Is that the right way to say it? Somebody promises this and that, and they can only deliver part of it. And so the whole community has to look just a little bit step back.
There's another complication to this would-be nuclear renaissance. The new TerraPower plant will use a more highly enriched uranium than other nuclear plants in the U.S. And for the moment, the only source of that special uranium is Russia. When Russia invaded Ukraine, TerraPower stopped buying it, and the project was delayed by 2 years. Chris Levesque says the U.S. is working on creating its own production plant, but so far, no dice.
Sadly, it's true that Russia has this capability, and we do not. And Congress has directed the Department of Energy and provided $700 million to the DOE in the IRA to go create this capability.
That's the Inflation Reduction Act, Biden's climate bill.
And DOE's moved a little too slow on it, actually, considering that both parties directed them to go create this capability. But I'm really confident they will.
In the meantime, the coal plant in Kemmerer still plans to shut down by 2036. That means all of those workers will soon need new jobs. Levesque believes that's one of TerraPower's biggest selling points to the community. He says the company will offer a job to every coal plant worker who wants one, and that unions are welcome. And he says unlike other kinds of carbon-free energy, like building a wind turbine or solar plant, the job skills are pretty transferable.
A whole lot of a nuclear plant is similar to a coal plant. You know, we still make electricity by boiling water, making steam, running it through a turbine. So, you know, the turbine building and all of that electrical equipment, you know, the heating, ventilation, air conditioning is all so similar to a coal plant. Those skills are completely transferable, which allows us to really, you know, reemploy those workers.
Wyoming Public Media's Caitlin Tan drove me to the TerraPower construction site in her giant pickup truck.
Okay, so we are gonna hit the interstate for a second here to go towards the coal plant and then or the power plant and the TerraPower deal.
On the outskirts of town, about a mile away from the coal-fired power plant, the nuclear plant is starting to go up. They broke ground in June, and it's already taking shape.
Okay, so here we go. Lots happening, honestly. A lot.
It's a busy construction site. 5 or 6 giant trucks moving earth around, and it looks like 30 or 40 workers digging and surveying.
Looks like, and that's where the majority of the jobs are coming from, is the construction. And I think, like, peak construction, there's going to be like 1,000 or maybe more, 1,500 employees. Temporary employees hired, which is pretty crazy when you think about that's like half of the population of Kemmer and Diamondville.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can see it already. Like, I'm looking at all these vehicles out here. I mean, that's already a decent amount of people.
The city is expecting a huge population boom, and that means getting its infrastructure ready, like upgrading the sewer system and creating new housing for the people building the plant now. And for the people who will work there in the future.
We've got people here in our hotels, our RV parks, our homes, renting, and a lot of people working in the area, many of them working for this project.
Even though the plant won't open for another 6 years, the town is already seeing an influx of money.
And it's helping our economy. They're shopping in our stores, they're eating in our restaurants, and they're helping our tax base. They are a good part of our economy. We are getting more tourism, I think. I think Kemmer's more on the map now. It's changed people's attitudes and confidence. People are confident to invest.
Not long after the project was announced, all the available houses sold fast, and new businesses started moving in downtown.
Since the nuclear plant, people are investing more in their properties, or people are buying and fixing them up, selling them, and some are turning them into Airbnbs. In the downtown, for example, the Opera House store, which is the oldest building, I understand, in Kemmer, and has been remodeled. And the bottom floor is a sandwich shop and other things. Upstairs is 3 Airbnbs.
Here's Mark Thatcher.
On the Triangle, which is the center of town, they've got a new coffee shop there, and they just reopened a place, a kind of a bakery deal, which is good. The theater runs there, and a guy just opened a tax place there.
And Cody Tinsky.
I've noticed more people that I don't know and recognize. And so, yeah, I think Kemmer's growing. I see a lot of people doing remodels on their homes, the older homes and stuff like that, I think. Yeah, there's definitely some new people coming to town.
In a lot of ways, Kemmer is poised to be a success story. Even years before the plant is complete, they're feeling the positive effects of a transition to a totally different economy and energy source. But they're not there yet. Even with all the new investment, the job offers, and the economic activity, Kemmer is not ready to let go of coal completely.
A local company has proposed building a $2.5 billion coal-to-ammonia factory, and another group recently invested millions into 136 acres of land near the coal plant to develop a new line of cosmetics made out of, you guessed it, coal.
We are definitely still working hard to do everything we can to try to help find other uses for coal. We would like to be pioneers in that area. Now, that requires a lot of, first of all, it requires a lot of coal, and it also requires a lot of investment.
But those coal-powered industries aren't likely to save coal from decline. Ultimately, coal, like many extractive industries, has a boom and bust cycle.
Muir believes the nuclear plant will help Kemmerer break that cycle and sustain the community for decades to come.
I mean, it's like a laboratory, really, of energy change. Obviously, for us, it means jobs and families being able to stay in Kemmerer and enjoy their life,
right?
Their quality of life. And that's what we're trying to do. Everything we can to help them. The government can't do everything, obviously.
Right, right.
But we can try to connect business and government together and do our best to help create hope and all those things. So
he and TerraPower hope this plant will be the first of several in Wyoming and elsewhere, and that it will help launch a new era of advanced nuclear power.
They're calling this Kemmerer number one.
Oh, okay.
So that means we're hoping for Kemmerer number two.
So stay tuned.
Yes, stay tuned. That means we could be up to about, potentially 1,000 megawatts of power.
Right.
And more power means that Mark Thatcher and his family will be able to stay here for another generation.
I got 21 grandkids. A lot of them live here in Kemmerer. If they wanted, in 10 years, if they wanted to come to Kemmerer to be business people, I'd like them to have the opportunity. If Kemmerer's dried up, it's not an opportunity.
Special thanks to Caitlin Tan and Wyoming Public Media for collaborating with us on this story. Caitlin has done a ton of reporting on the energy transition in Wyoming, and you can find a link to that in our show notes.
If things go according to plan, workers should be able to walk out of their jobs at the Kemmerer coal mine and power plant and right into new jobs at the nuclear plant in 2030. But not every community can count on Bill Gates to roll in and set up an alternative energy industry. Across the country, there are many other coal communities in various stages of transition, trying to figure out what to do next. In West Virginia, one community decided to connect with another emerging industry, energy storage. A battery manufacturing startup called Sparks made an agreement with the United Mine Workers of America to prioritize displaced coal miners for jobs. Elsewhere in Appalachia, there's a unionized company called Solar Hauler that's also hiring folks from the coal fields. They call themselves Sun Miners.
Stories like these are great to hear, but the permanent job opportunities from solar energy don't often match those from coal, and the economic loss to an area can be significant. A 2023 study by the National Bureau of Economic Research found that fewer than 1% of all workers who leave a job in carbon-intensive industries like oil and gas get another one in a clean industry. And yet, coal is winding down anyway.
Let's go now to the community of Farmington, New Mexico, on the edge of the Navajo Nation. For decades, two nearby coal-fired power plants produced tons of electricity. They also emitted tons of carbon dioxide, along with heavy metals, coal ash, and particulate matter.
The San Juan Generating Station Four Corners Power Plant, at one point, were considered the largest single point source of pollution in the United States. And I mean, this place is one big brown cloud.
Mike Eisenfeld is Energy and Climate Program Manager at the San Juan Citizens Alliance in northern New Mexico. For years, his group has advocated for the health and economic well-being of the surrounding area. They strongly opposed the fossil fuel facilities and pushed for clean energy replacement. The plants were expected to operate for the next couple decades. Then, suddenly, the utility owners announced they would be shutting down the San Juan Generating Station 30 years early. With pollution regulations and economics, it just didn't make sense anymore. The town panicked. Though coal was already in decline, the power plant and its mine still generated significant tax revenue and employed hundreds of people, many of them Navajo. The jobs paid high wages.
I remember being at their meeting. It's sort of heart-wrenching because all of the people who work at San Juan Mine, a lot of the miners were there with their families. And so we have a lot of empathy for our community and the complexity and diversity of the people who live here.
But then a tech startup came in with the promise that they'd extend the life of the coal plant by installing carbon capture and storage technology. It's a technology that's relatively unproven and actually burns more coal, but does have a lot of recent federal support. At a town hall meeting back in 2019, residents and plant workers pleaded with the mayor and council to approve the project.
My name is Geneva Griego. I am currently employed by PNM at San Juan Generating Station. I urge you to vote yes. Watching as our coworkers have had to move away and relocate their families, most of them, their houses are being foreclosed on because there's not a market here to sell it.
My name is Titus Padilla, and I'm a journeyman mechanic at the power plant, and I've lived here all my life. I'm too old to find another job. I've been looking, and the older I get, they don't want older people.
My name is Chris Hunter. I'm a member of the Public Utility Commission, and I'm glad to call this place my home. And as much as I embrace all forms of energy, and we should be an energy hub, the fact is solar panels and wind does not replace jobs.
Local leaders were all for it, but the project fizzled out. And the San Juan Generating Station near Farmington officially closed in the summer of 2022. In the years since the closure, Central Consolidated School District, which serves about 5,000 mostly Native American students, has seen a 700% increase in student homelessness rates. Eisenfeld says it's heartbreaking to see how vulnerable the community was, in large part because they were so dependent on coal. But coal had been the driving force of jobs and economic stability in the community for so long, it was almost impossible for some to envision life without it.
They basically bought into the idea that carbon capture, carbon sequestration at San Juan Generating Station was a done deal and was going to be the savior. And the Central Consolidated School District and the city of Farmington kind of refused to engage in the idea that the San Juan Generating Station's demise could occur.
But he says this is not the time to be pointing fingers.
I think it's a misnomer to think that, you know, it's all sort of like enviros versus coal miners. It's not really like that here in Farmington. I think that a lot of us have a lot of connectivity and a lot more sympathy and empathy for the plight of people who are impacted by change that sometimes we don't have control over.
There was no requirement the utility do anything with the power plant site. No cleanup, no remediation, nothing. No one wanted to pay for it. Multiple people we spoke with said the plan at the time was simply a fence and a dog. So Eisenfeld and the San Juan Citizens Alliance advocated for demolishing and cleaning up the site. They wanted to make sure the utility, the Public Service Commission of New Mexico, couldn't just walk away and leave it open to decay. They also didn't want someone else to come take over the plant and fire it up again. And they wanted to make sure the workers were provided for. Eisenfeld's group partnered with several organizations from the Navajo Nation.
And our partners are Diné Citizens Against Ruining Our Environment, Tonejoni Ani, which is Sacred Water Speaks in Navajo, Neva, and the Western Environmental Law Center have been our attorneys. And so that relationship has been really helpful in allowing us to work within the legal realm. Our opinion was that we needed to have a just and orderly transition and start thinking about what was going to replace not only the power at San Juan Generating Station, but property taxes, money for local school districts, and provide for transition for the workers.
As he says, a just and orderly transition was going to require solutions on multiple fronts. So he and the alliance got to work, and they weren't alone. In 2018, along with other local, environmental, and community groups, and the Public Utility Commission of New Mexico, they wrote a law that would address this problem of abandoned fossil fuel infrastructure and its workers. It took two tries, but in 2019, the Energy Transition Act was signed by the governor of New Mexico.
Some of the smartest lawmakers we know have called the Energy Transition Act the most complex piece of legislation they have ever seen. And they aren't kidding. The bill, which has been signed into law, by the way, sets a goal of carbon-free emissions for major utilities in the state by 2045.
The law allows the utility to recoup its investments in the coal plant. In exchange, The company has to provide severance and job retraining support to the plant workers and affected communities. Though a couple years on, some of those payments seem to have stalled. The law didn't require the demolition of the San Juan Generating Station. But in 2021, San Juan County passed an ordinance which started that process to protect the environment and public health. Eisenfeld's coalition also pushed for a new way to generate energy to take the place of coal. The Energy Transition Act requires some of that to be built in the Central Consolidated School District to help offset the loss of property tax revenue. Now, the San Juan Solar Project is being built northeast of the former San Juan Generating Station, bringing a $500 million investment into the community.
And our intervention, I believe that that resulted in the replacement resources being placed here in San Juan County in proximity to the San Juan Generating Station that created property taxes, that created money for the local school districts, and also created 250 jobs for people who worked on a solar project that has been completed.
In August of this year, the San Juan Generating Station smokestacks were finally demolished, coming down in a cloud of dust. For many, this represented the real end of the coal plant and the jobs that came with it. But nearby, fields of solar panels now cover the land. They'll connect to the grid using the infrastructure left over from the former coal plant. Eisenfeld says there are more solar projects under discussion, and the community is shifting in other ways, too.
One of the benefits of where we're going with the renewable energy is that the city of Farmington is trying to rebrand itself. Their logo is Jolt Your Journey to bring in recreation, tourism, retirees. So now when you walk around outside of my house in Farmington, we have blue skies. We got a way better quality of life. Now I'm more convinced than ever that this is an opportunity for us to diversify our economy, transform our economy, and to build something a bit different than we've experienced before.
Over the years, as coal has declined, many people have left Farmington. But for those who've been able to stay, the air they breathe is cleaner. Coming up, a community in Arizona tries to make their transition to a cleaner economy a more just economy, too.
We don't want to repeat the past, you know? We don't want the people nearby to not have power, not have the benefits of what's being generated off these projects. You know, what are revenues that can be shared with the community? How can you incorporate the families giving up their land? What kind of scholarships can be provided to the children of the local families? And so that's really the paradigm shift that is everywhere now.
That's up next when Climate One continues.
This episode is brought to you by Starbucks.
That is fire.
Whoa, that's good.
This might be the drink of the summer.
Okay, I like this one too. I'm rocking with it, okay?
Try it for yourself. Starbucks Refreshers Concentrates are coming home. Find them in the coffee aisle and make it yours.
This is Climate One. I'm Arianna Brocious. As we heard earlier in the show, the post-coal future in Kemmerer, Wyoming is looking bright. But there are many coal communities across the country that are also facing a transition, and in each place, each challenge is different. For the last 60 years, the Four Corners region, where Arizona, Utah, Colorado, and New Mexico meet, has been a literal powerhouse. Three massive coal-fired power plants on the Navajo Nation kept the lights on all across the region in southwestern cities like Las Vegas. It also provided the power to pump Colorado River water to cities like Phoenix and Tucson.
My name is Tony Skrulanis. I am Diné. I am what's called Bitterwater Clan, Totichini, born for Tachini and Lithuanian. My dad is Lithuanian. And my grandpa's are what's called the Migos Clan.
The Navajo Generating Station and its supplier mine were built in the 1970s. For decades, they were a fixture for many Navajos, or Diné.
I could see the coal mine since I was a kid, you know. That's where I grew up in. I was raised by my great grandparents, and a lot of my family worked in power plants and coal mines. That's kind of what took me through college as a kid. You know, my dad was a welder and at power plants.
Skrilanis is head of commerce for the Navajo Nation. He says back in the 70s, the U.S. federal government marketed the coal extraction industry to the tribe as an economic engine. And it really was.
Back then, like $50,000 jobs were just unheard of, you know, $50,000, $60,000. And that's what these, especially these welders were making and engineers.
Those high salaries supported whole families. And community members still have a lot of pride in their work in the mines and power plants.
I love his middle class. I think maybe on Navajo it would be high class, you know, because they were high earners. You know, they had the big trucks. And Navajos, when we bring in high income, we don't, it's not just for us, it's for our family. And, you know, a lot of us, we, you know, we have a different type of like family structure where we support our in-laws and we help each other. There's a whole structure of our society that ensures that, you know. So a lot of these high income earners were making massive impact on their families.
But the coal industry was extractive and polluting too. Skrilanis grew up in an area called Black Mesa, where in 1974, more than 12,000 Navajo people were forced to move from the land to allow for coal mining operations by Peabody Coal.
And the first coal mine, Peabody Coal Mine, was using 1.4 billion gallons of water a year, you know, very pristine, ancient aquifer water that was deposited in the last ice age, you know. They pumped a lot of it for 30 years to slurry coal, you know, to another power plant in Nevada. So that's really been impacted.
When it came to mitigating that extraction or pollution, Diné communities had little recourse.
So we always didn't have the best deals as governments and as communities. You know, a lot of this was top down, and our people, we didn't have the negotiators to say, here's what's a reasonable rate per ton for coal that really is fair, you know. Here's what we should be charging for this ancient ice age water.
All the while, the plant was pumping out energy that was powering other cities in Arizona, California, and New Mexico. And yet, the people who were making that all possible, whose land and water and air were impacted by that extraction, were left in the dark.
There's a lot of homes around these former power plants, or, you know, they never got electricity, they never got running water. And so the economic injustice is very tremendous, you know.
And that's still the case. Currently, there are more than 13,000 families living on the Navajo Nation that do not have working electricity. The Black Mesa mine closed in 2005, along with one of its main partners, the Mojave Generating Station in Nevada. Then in 2019, Navajo Generating Station and its companion mine shut down too.
Hundreds of jobs were lost. I think the total I've seen for the Black Mesa mine and the power plant was over 700 direct jobs, people working at the plant. But the revenue, the tax loss to, tax loss isn't just to Navajo, it's to the state too, the state and the county. But the Navajo bottom line, I think from NGS, what I've heard is like $40 million, somewhere in that range, you know?
NGS, Navajo Generating Station.
Navajo Generating Station, yes. And then I know what I've read also is like Hopi government, 85% of their general fund revenue came from the power plant. Yeah, I mean,
85%?
The coal mine. 85%, yes. So these are significant. I mean, this has been the bread and butter of Navajos.
But here's where the story changes a bit from what we've heard elsewhere this episode. One of the Navajo Generating Station's owners, an Arizona utility called Salt River Project, worked to lessen the blow. The utility offered all employees jobs at other facilities around the state. And many of them, including some of Tony Skrilanis' relatives, took those jobs. He says others took retirement or severance. The Navajo Nation chose to keep a number of facilities at the plant, including the warehouse and maintenance buildings and railroad, worth around $18 million. They're using them for new enterprises.
We have a tiny home manufacturing business there in which we're expanding. That manufacturing facility of tiny homes was able to hire over like 100 workers, and many of them are former power plant workers too, that were able to come back and work with steel and construction again. You know, we're looking at reusing the railroad into a tourist type railroad.
Skrilanis and others have been working to diversify the region's economy. They're developing a master plan that includes building a $700 million resort project and bringing in solar power. Skrilanis says they're already being approached by several energy companies who want to make use of the old coal infrastructure, like the transmission lines.
We have kept the substation, and we are there are a couple of solar projects immediately around us. Some of them will use the right-of-way of our former railroad, you know, which we're, again, we're working to restart that railroad and make it like electric cars and bicycles and, you know, for rail-to-trails running area, campgrounds along the route. Because this is iconic area. Like, the views are magnificent, all different ways. Perfect place to grow tourism and to really help a lot of entrepreneurs.
And the financial impacts could be significant.
Some of the projects that we're working on in the area in totality will make almost as much revenue as that we lost from the power plant, you know?
But he says it's taking a while for the community to fully embrace a new economic model.
After a few years, people have accepted it. There's an acceptance of the diversification, and there is awareness of the environmental impacts. Because we herd sheep, you know, we're out in the land, and we're, you know, when you're a sheep herder, you're monitoring the different types of vegetation and plants, and you're feeling the wind patterns and the moisture levels. The same goes for a farmer. We have a lot of farmers that are dry farmers, you know, and so you're really concerned about like wind volatility and moisture levels and just the heat and the dryness. And I think they're all feeling the impacts of like climate change, and they know that power plants are a big contributor, you know.
The Navajo Nation is squarely in the middle of the energy transition. Most of its coal plants and mines have already closed. The last remaining coal plant is the Four Corners power plant, and that's scheduled to close in 2031. Skrilanis says they'll be ready.
It does hurt to lose something that is a big part of your society and really supports the uplifting of these ways. But we're aware that we need to transition. We're aware that now that we have to, even at Four Corners, start thinking about what if, you know. And luckily we have the experience of this power plant that we know beforehand, like, boy, we better start planning this, that. We start looking at this sector. There's a lot of things we could do way beforehand.
And this time, as their plans take shape, the community will be at the center.
We don't want to repeat the past, you know. We don't want to, people nearby to not have power, not have the benefits of what's being generated off these projects. You know, what are revenues that can be shared with the community? How can you incorporate the families giving up their land? What kind of scholarships can be provided to the children of the local families? And so that's really the paradigm shift that is everywhere now.
You know, Austin, I think it's really inspiring to hear from people all around the country who are really working hard to reorient their communities toward a cleaner future.
Absolutely. And, you know, as more and more communities are going to be facing these decisions, I do want to acknowledge that these transitions are difficult and not everyone ends up with their lives improved. That's part of why these stories are so important.
True. And a big reason we wanted to do this particular episode is because of the tremendous amount of money the federal government has been sending to places all around the country to help fund this transition.
Right, they've been putting them into what they're calling energy communities. These are places that have experienced significant economic decline due to the loss of coal, oil, or gas industries.
Or they might be places with what are known as brownfield sites, and those are places contaminated by hazardous wastes or pollutants, often from industrial activities. And sometimes they can be redeveloped for clean energy projects. We've seen actually a number of brownfield sites be redeveloped as solar farms. So more than $54 billion in federal investments have been awarded to those communities. And most of it's coming from President Biden's signature climate law, the Inflation Reduction Act.
Right. And since 2021, federal investments have driven roughly $315 billion in private sector funding for energy communities nationwide. And as we've talked about before on the show, a lot of that money is going to red districts, which may have partly been a political calculation, but it's also because rural areas tend to have more industrial businesses, and red states generally have fewer regulatory hurdles for energy projects and a weaker union influence.
And as we know, Donald Trump will soon be back in charge, and he said he wants to, quote unquote, terminate the Inflation Reduction Act. But as we've said, billions have already gone out the door, and red districts are starting to see some of that promised job growth and industry growth.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really hard to imagine elected officials supporting a rollback now. Like, sorry, constituents, you were promised thousands of jobs, and now we're going to take them away. I mean, the cat might already be out of the bag.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens. We know the Biden administration has been working overtime to get these funds out the door in the waning days of their administration. And so far, federal agencies have announced 2/3 of that funding has been allocated. But it's really unclear how much of that federal investment will continue after January.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it seems like we'll see a big push to undo some of this progress, but you can't hold it all back. For the most part, when a coal plant or mine shuts down, it's done for good. These coal communities aren't going back.
Right, especially if they've already turned a corner in terms of developing new industries and jobs.
Exactly. And, you know, some in the renewable energy industry are hoping for a fair fight because right now, as Bill McKibben has said, the cheapest way to create electricity is to point solar panels at the sun.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. You can find links to more reporting about these coal communities on our website. And you can see what our team is reading by subscribing to our newsletter. Sign up at climateone.org.
Climate One is a production of the Commonwealth Club. Our team includes Greg Dalton, Brad Marshland, Jenny Park, Ariana Brocious, Megan Basilia, Ben Testani, and Jenny Lawton. Our theme music is by George Young. I'm Austin Colon. Thank you.